Jay Perini teaches poetry at Middlebury College. He's written several volumes of poetry, as well as numerous anthologies and books of criticism. His latest is called Why Poetry Matters, which is odd, since the book starts with the sentence, "Poetry doesn't matter to most people. That is, most people don't write it, don't read it, and don't have any idea why anybody would spend valuable time doing such a thing." So I asked him, does poetry matter?
Well, just 3 days ago, I went to an elementary school in Ripton, Vermont, and the kids had been well prepared for me. Robert Frost lived nearby when he was living, and the kids had been asked to memorize a poem by Frost. And I was really startled by how transformed these kids were by the language and how excited they were by it. My feeling is that poems are little engines of language that have been beautifully tuned. And so the language reflects and digs into reality in ways that have a kind of spiritual effect on the listener, the reader, the speaker. I mean, poems dig into the mind. I still remember the time when I was about 18 years old, and I picked up a volume of poems by Gerard Manley Hopkins. And I read this little poem called Spring and Fall to a young child. And I still remember feeling like my entire day I was trembling all day long, because this poem explained something to me about reality that I hadn't understood before. I can say this poem from memory. Shall I try that?
Yes, would you please?
Margaret, are you grieving over golden groves on leaving? Leaves, like the things of man, you with your fresh thoughts care for. Can you? Ah, as the heart grows older, it will come to such sights colder by and by, nor spare a sigh, though worlds of wanwood leafmeal lie. And yet you will weep and know why. Sorrow's springs are the same. Nor mouth had, no, nor mind expressed, what heart heard of, ghost guessed. It is the blight man was born for. It is Margaret you mourn for. You know, you come across a line like, the worlds of wanwood leafmeal lie, and you see a poet of genius kind of going crazy, going wild. And there's this wild energy in poetry which is then focused. It's like you take a magnifying glass and put the sun to it and let that little beam go down there on the page. It burns a hole in the page. A great poem burns a hole in the page. And then when you read it, it burns a hole in your mind.
Language isn't simple for you once you've discovered poetry, is it?
Well, no, because you're also then horrified by the kind of language you hear sometimes on the radio and the television. You know, it's very difficult to listen to this bad language. I mean, I always think of that, again, going back to Frost, that line that if you're not trained in poetry, you're not safe to be let loose in the world, you know? And I think that's true, you know? And I always think, you know, George Bush was not safe to be let loose in the world, because when he bungled that metaphor, war on terror, I think he did a lot of damage because it confused people. People stopped thinking poetically. And they began to get very confused in their thinking. Frost said, you have to know how far you can go with a metaphor and where the metaphor breaks down.
What is it he said? Unless you're at home in the metaphor, you're not safe anywhere?
You're not safe anywhere. You're not safe to be let loose in the world.
What is poetry now? You talk about teaching Robert Frost to middle schoolers. What about rap poetry? What about lyrics to songs? What about Bob Dylan and an earlier generation? Is that poetry as well?
You know, I was driving down the road just a few weeks ago, and Bob Dylan's Dream, that old song, came on the radio, and I thought, oh, you know, I was moved to tears, you know, Bob Dylan's Dream, you know. While riding on train going west, I fell asleep for to take my rest. I dreamed a dream that made me sad concerning myself and the last few or the first few friends I had. And I thought, you know, that is absolute perfection. We've all had this terrible sadness because we remember how when we were 17, 16, 18, and this little cohort of friends that we loved, small group, were breaking up, we're sitting around a campfire, and we know we're going our own ways forever. And he says, I'd give $1 million at the drop of a hat just to go back for a moment and be with those friends and to repossess that moment of late childhood. late adolescence. And I thought, well, this is perfection. This is poetry. And for some academic to come along and say, oh, this is just pop music, is crazy. I mean, this language in Bob Dylan and so many other singers, you know, operates on a zillion levels and in many ways participates in the great traditions of poetry.
Well, we were talking at the very beginning, at least, about why poetry matters. I guess you've answered it in a way, and the answer doesn't necessarily involve poetry in the traditional sense. It's poetry as it comes from and to the people.
Exactly. It's also language that people can think they can live without poetry. I would argue that, in fact, their life is infinitely poorer if they don't have poetry. Because, first of all, there's wisdom in poetry. You look at all the violence going on, you know. You see, I was just looking at, you know, last night and seeing that some Palestinians had, you know, blown up somebody somewhere. And I thought of those great lines of September 1st, 1939, a poem that after 9/11 was read over and over and over again on the radio. W.H. Auden's really great poem about that moment when the Germans invaded Poland. September 1st, 1939, and the world was set into chaos. You know, from that very moment, think of it, 60 million people died in World War II. 60 million. In that poem, there's just a few lines that I love in that poem. He says, I and the public know what all school children learn. Those to whom evil is done do evil in return. Well, wow, it's rhymed, it's simple, but it gets to the horrifying truth of contemporary world affairs. Those to whom evil is done do evil in return. I think Auden had a peculiarly fine understanding of politics, society, government, and the terrors of tyranny, because he lived through the heart of the 20th century, especially the 30s and 40s when there was so much destruction going on in the world. And he wrote this poem called Epitaph on a Tyrant. He writes, perfection of a kind was what he was after. And the poetry he invented was easy to understand. He knew human folly like the back of his hand and was greatly interested in armies and fleets. When he laughed, respectable senators burst with laughter. And when he cried, the little children died in the streets.
Wow.
I mean, that's a pretty powerful understanding of tyranny and autocracy, you know, and how the senators go along and laugh with the dictator when he's laughing, and how when the dictator is not happy, children die in the streets.
In the world we live in, what if language isn't enough?
Well, it would be crazy to suggest that poetry can change the world's ills. As W.H. Auden says in his elegy for W.B. Yeats, poetry makes nothing happen. I think it's been probably very rare for a poem to have actually stopped an army from marching into another country. A poem can't stop the progress of cancer. It can't stop a disease. A poem probably rarely will stop one friend from saying something injurious to another friend. All of these terrible little things, these fissures in society, these cracks in the teacup, which widen into huge gaps and take us into the vast caverns of death and ultimate silence, will always occur. Poetry is simply one of the places we go for refuge. You know, it's always inadequate. It's one of the sadnesses of language. And I think one of its poignant aspects is the fact that poetry is always inadequate. It gestures in the direction of silence, but it can't really take us there. It just points toward.
Jay Perini teaches poetry at Middlebury College. He's the author of Why Poetry Matters.